drops, then the stock market plunges. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. The Dow is down 860 points. The NASDAQ is falling more than 500, a more than 3% drop after a worse-than-expected jobs report for July.
114,000 jobs created, which was shocking. The unemployment rate went up to 4.3%. That's the first time it's hit that level since October of 2021.
Fox Business Network's Edward Lawrence. President Biden insists in a statement we're making progress, saying unemployment is gradually slowing as inflation declines significantly. Now that he is no longer running for re-election, Vice President Harris has a lot of campaign cash. The Democrats and their new presumptive nominee raised a monthly record $310 million in July. The president was just asked as he left the White House for Delaware about Harris's pick for a running mate that's coming soon and replied, "I'll let her work that out." The president was also asked about an American in prison in Russia not released in yesterday's prisoner swap, Mark Fogel.
We're not giving up on that.
Three Americans who were freed are now in Texas for medical evaluation, including Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich and Paul Whelan, both wrongly convicted in Russia as spies.
The FSB grabbed me, said I was a spy. I'm apparently a general in the Army, a secret agent for DIA. This is the nonsense narrative they came up with, and they wouldn't let it go.
Now, President Biden greeted the freedom of Americans late last night after he had a call with Israel's prime minister. Fox's Jared Halpern reports from the White House.
In a call with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, President Biden discussed efforts to support Israel's defense against threats from ballistic missiles and drones. Those capabilities include new defensive U.S. military deployments. Iran is vowing a response to the assassination of Hamas's political leader in Tehran. Earlier this week, they blamed that on Israel. Israel has not commented on the death.
America's listening to Fox News.
Hey, everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Getting quality employees to fill positions in your company is essential, but finding those people can be a major hassle unless you use ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality people a breeze. ZipRecruiter's advanced technology identifies candidates with the right skills, sends you great matches, then you can easily invite them to apply. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See for yourself. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free to try ZipRecruiter for free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Broadcasting Americanism from the York Heating and Air Conditioning and ACYuma.com studios. 560 KBLU.
Good morning from the News 11 Information Desk. I'm Scott Gross. A local jewelry store is robbed early Thursday morning. Yuma police officers responded to a burglary alarm at Zales Jewelers in the Yuma Palms Mall area just after 4 o'clock in the morning. Officers found the front glass door shattered, also shattered display cases, with the burglar fleeing the scene with an undisclosed amount of merchandise. Anyone with any information about the case is asked to call the Yuma Police Department or 78 Crime to remain anonymous. And another wave of ballots have been counted regarding Tuesday's primary election in Yuma County in the tight race for the Republican nomination for Yuma County Recorder. David Lara has increased his lead from 41 votes to 70 over incumbent Richard Colwell. Yuma County still has a little over 2,000 ballots left to count, along with 114 provisional ballots. Join us on the TV side for News 11 every weekday at 5, 6, and 10 for all of your local news, weather, and sports.
Excessive heat warning is back in the Yuma area for the forecast Saturday through Monday, the excessive heat warning. For today, sunny and hot, 109, 87 tonight. Sunny and 111 on Saturday, 88 Saturday night. Sunday, sunny and 110.
Investment advisory services offered through CWM, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor. Welcome to Money Talk with Yuma Investment Group's Tom Rush, founder, wealth advisor, and George Davis Sr. Wealth Advisor.
We'll be right back.
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk. Tom Rush here, George Davis, Sr., Yuma Investment Group here. Good morning, George.
Morning, Tom. So you pretty cool out there, that thunder, huh?
Yeah, I like the humidity. I'm a big fan of the humidity, George.
I like plants, so my plants like the humidity.
Tom, have you run around in the parking lot with an iron pipe in
your hand? I didn't actually hear of any thunder. There was some thunder this morning?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was the garbage truck coming by or what.
Isn't the wife getting the broom out, pounding the kitchen?
Well, I was worried about that, but she was already gone to work. So.
Okay.
No, it was cracking pretty good. Yeah. Did you hear it, Russ?
Yeah, I did in here. Yeah, it cooled off a lot. I mean, it's going to be very temporary.
Oh, is it? No, I believe
it.
It
went from 88 degrees this morning to 75.
Ooh.
So something rolled in. I was watching my phone here, and I was like, wow.
That is a big deal.
That's some cloud cover, so that's that's always nice to...
It's back up to 91 now.
Oh.
Okay. With humidity, so good. Oof. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
so,
So we'll talk a little bit about the markets, as most people have seen... The last week and a half or so, things have kind of gone back down pretty significant. Jobs came out this morning, the jobs report.
Just over 100,000, right?
Yeah, so it wasn't enough, right?
Yeah, I know. It's pretty weak.
So you see the Dow's down 924, which I haven't seen that in a while.
It was down a lot yesterday. It was down 400 yesterday.
Yeah,
500.
Yeah, I haven't seen it get close to 1,000. Intel decided they're going to cut 15,000 jobs. So I think corporate America is tightening their belt on how they, I'm not saying things got fat and happy and such, but I think they realized that the economy might be, the GDP number came out, it was about 2.8, I believe.
Which isn't
bad. The question now is, any number that comes out, I always question it. I know the government's, the way they measure inflation, they change the formula on that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure on the GDP number, but things are getting a little tense.
Would be the right term. Is this kind of what the Fed wanted, Tom? I mean, that's what people get real surprised when the market starts to, the economy starts to soften. But they've been waiting for this. They want inflation down. They want the economy to cool. And then they've been hinting at the first rate cuts in September. So it seems like it's kind of playing into their hands. Now, you'd rather have a soft landing like they talk about as opposed to, a recession, which is the talk was today now with the jobs number. But that's what the Fed's been wanting. They want the economy to cool down. They want inflation to come down. And that's what they're seeing.
Yeah. I mean, you got to remember, at the beginning of the year, they were saying four to five rate cuts.
Mm-hmm.
We've had zero. But I know you said the probability in September is now over, 50%?
70%.
That was going to be a rate cut.
Yeah.
The question would be a quarter of a point or a half a point.
Yeah, that's the question now.
So I think it would depend on how things progress. Keep having days like this, it'd probably be a half a point.
Well, that's what old Powell always says, data dependent.
Yeah.
We got to wait for more data. Well, they got some this morning. So.
Yeah. So I think you're going to see, too, this tech market really had a heck of a run, especially the semiconductors and the AI.
Mm-hmm.
So, like anything that runs up really fast has to spring back down.
Well, from the high, it's down 10%, so they call that correction territory.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it's more than 10% on some of them.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the NASDAQ.
NASDAQ. So could be interesting. Usually in the summertime, the market doesn't hold up well anyways, in my experience. But, June, July was decent, so I guess August is going to go down in the history books as having, some type of pullback.
Mm.
Main thing to do is have a plan, write it down, because, your brain will play tricks on you and, you won't stick to the plan. So if you... come up with a plan, write it down, and then just try to stick to it. Because, money's emotional, and day after day, it will get the best of you emotionally, and stuff you think, I never sell this thing, and then when it drops X amount of percent, you're going to want to sell it, and that's not the time to do it.
Yeah.
So you gotta mentally, emotionally get your plan on track and stick to it, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
And the best thing about a market going down is... It's the best thing about a market going down.
You have can buy in with better value.
Yeah, you can dollar buy. You can buy more. Buy low, sell high.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's, assuming there's some money coming in monthly, or you have some money put somewhere safe for like the bank or that, it's an opportunity. And that's, you know, my 30 years of doing this, the people that seem to do the best look at down markets as opportunities, and up markets. When most people have, you know, when NVIDIA was going nuts, I mean, how many clients and people told you, oh, let's buy NVIDIA, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was a lot. Yeah. So people like to buy when things are high, looking good. And then when things get kind of crunched, then they want to back away. So it's definitely, it's part of the brain. I mean, it's, you know, about a third of our job, I think, being a financial advisor is being a counselor on the emotion of money. You know?
Yeah, taking the emotion. I'm glad you brought that up, Tom, because that's good advice, writing it down, having a plan, whether that's a plan like we do through Money Guide Pro, or just having a plan of attack for your investments for when this does happen, whether you reallocate and take advantage of a down market, or you have some money where you can dollar cost average in, because people do get emotional and they'll sell now. They'll see the market down, they'll sell now, and you know, it rebounds, and they'll be
so really the people that have to pay a lot of attention, I think, are the ones that are gonna retire in the next 5 years, or they're gonna retire tomorrow, because those people really have to recalibrate what they're doing. And I give the analogy of people putting money away into 401k or thrift savings is like a plane flying at high altitude, and they're like, yeah, if the market drops, I just keep buying more, and eventually it goes up, and you know, I'm better off than what I was. But there can be some retribution if you keep money too aggressive before you retire. From 1949 to 2022, the worst pullback in the S&P was 2008. The S&P went down 51%. So if you were at the if you put money in just dumb luck at the top, you wrote it down 51%, left it in there, and wrote it all back up just to get back to even, it was about a 4-year time frame. So
100% return to get back to the 50.
Yeah. Yeah, but just to get your money back, it was a 4-year process from top to bottom and then back up to the top. Well, when you start pulling money out to retire on, your money will evaporate a lot quicker when you're pulling money out of a bad market. So it's really important to have the cash flow available and relatively safe for investments. We kind of recommend about a 5-year cash flow. And 5 years was long enough to get your money back in 08. Doesn't mean we might not have a worse one than 08, but that was the worst in a while. And that's what people got to watch out for, especially as you approach retirement.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty crucial to have a plan and make sure, like I remember in 08, I mean, I could, a couple people, and I'll bring up a government worker, thrift savings account, money was all aggressive, and met with us. We pointed out, hey, that you're pretty aggressive, especially if you're going to retire within a year. And, we're good, and the guy never changed anything. Market got hit, talked to him again, and he's delaying retirement for 3 more years.
Uh-huh.
So it could actually force you back. I mean, it could force you to. Now, luckily, he was smart enough to realize, I got to work 3 more years, probably didn't touch the money, it's going to come back. But some people, for whatever reason, can't, or they might, not get forced out of work, but they might be at the point where employers kind of insinuating, hey, you need to retire kind of thing. That happens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to get that down.
When you talk about the 5 years of cash flow, expand on that a little bit, Tom. So with our bucket strategy, we have more conservative money in bucket one, we call it, moderate bucket two, and then the more aggressive bucket three. So if someone's taking distributions, we take the annual distribution amount, and you want 5 years of that in the more conservative bucket one strategy.
Yeah, so let's just say someone's taking $40,000 a year. That's what they need from their investments. Bucket one is a most conservative model. It's 80% bonds and fixed income, and 20% equity. And then that's about a 1 to 2 year bucket. So you'd put like 2 years of income in that, which would be about 80,000.
Okay.
And then the next bucket is 3 to 5 years, which really means you're not touching that for 3 to 5 years.
You're touching the 1 to 2 year.
One to two years first. and that's 60% bonds and in income investments, and 40% equity. Mm-hmm. And those two buckets by themselves is pretty much where retired people should be. I mean, that's a classical allocation for someone retired.
Yeah.
And then, so that means if you have 5 years, you know, bucket one, bucket two is totaling 5 years, you should have about $200,000
if you're taking the
40 in those buckets.
Okay.
And then anything then beyond that, that's bucket three, which is a 5 to 10 year time horizon. So again, in the plan, we're not touching this money for 5 to 10 years. And that's 60% equity, about 40% bonds. And then you have a 10 year plus bucket, the last bucket, bucket four, and that's 100% equity. And there's some products you can get into that kind of hedge against the market, but it's growth orientated, and that's going to be a 10-year plus. And that's money that you know, because you know, you have someone who has, you know, $800,000 in a retirement account. They're never going to call us and say, hey, I need all my $800,000, you know. If they do, they've got some problems. So it's people are living on their money. So what you really want to do in these four buckets is allocate a certain amount out for 10 years plus. Because historically, the markets is where the return's at. You got to take the ups and
keep
the downs.
Up with inflation, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, then have the next. So you really want to have your money kind of going at like four different speeds with different allocations. And one of the mistakes I see people make, too, is they retire and say, okay, I'm retired now. I read I should be, you know, 30, 40% equity, 70, 30, 60% bonds. And that's where they want to be.
Everything's in there.
Everything's in there. And then that method, especially the way interest rates got so low, might not even keep up with inflation. Mm-hmm. So that's not a good method.
And in 2018, it wasn't a good method because there was usually there's a correlation, you know, opposite correlation between the market and the bond market or the fixed income. If the market's down, the fixed income is usually going to go up, a safe haven. But in 18, they both went down together.
Well, in 22, they did too.
In 22, yeah.
22 was the worst performance in bonds since the Civil War, believe it or not.
Ah, so they were down 13.
Yeah. Bond, the typical, the Barclays Bond Index was down 13% in 22. And the equity, the S&P was down, I believe, 18.
Mm-hmm.
It was a double hit. But so, yeah, having a plan is key, and then sticking to the plan and updating the plan is key. So we and really the only way to keep track of all this, because our brains with compounding interest and taxes and that, our brains aren't going to aren't going to do that. So you really need a software program to do that. And we have Money Guide Pro, which is one of the, you know, financial advising softwares we use that's pretty appropriate.
We're up against our next break, our first break here, and Russ over there, he's paying attention.
Be right back. Right back. This is Money Talk.
This is Derek Hegerberg, branch manager with Guild Mortgage, NMLS number 180899. Thank you for making us Yuma's best mortgage lender 7 years in a row. At Guild Mortgage, we're more than just a lender. We're your trusted guide through the home buying journey. We do offer educational workshops for first-time home buyers, credit and budgeting, and also real estate investing. We proudly serve your friends, family, and neighbors, answering questions and finding lending solutions. How may we serve you today? Give us a call at 928-247-9089 or visit guildyuma.com.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary, obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
This is Derek Hagerberg, branch manager with Guild Mortgage, NMLS number 180899. Thank you for making us Yuma's best mortgage lender 7 years in a row. At Guild Mortgage, we're more than just a lender. We're your trusted guide through the home buying journey. We do offer educational workshops for first-time home buyers, credit and budgeting, and also real estate investing. We proudly serve your friends, family, and neighbors, answering questions and finding lending solutions. How may we serve you today? Give us a call at 928-247-9089 or visit guildyuma.com.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
Welcome back to Yuma, AM560 KBLU is Money Talk. George Davis Sr. Hope you're having an awesome Friday out there. Tom Rush.
Junior.
Junior.
Junior. I like that.
Yeah. Russ Clark. We just call you Mr.
Yeah. Well, good. Those pronouns still work. I'm not happy about that.
So we're talking finances here, of course. And Carson, which is our RIA, Carson Group, Registered Investment Advisory Firm. They have a mid-year outlook called Eyes on the Prize, Tom. And they came out with that, and I was reading it. So I had a couple of things I wanted to ask you a little bit about. But you're talking historically about the market, and they had a
think about
what's happened the last 7 years. I find it interesting. I'll tell you what it was.
Okay, but before you go into that, I will give kudos out to our Carson research team because at the beginning of 23, end of 22, beginning of 23, mm-hmm. there was probably, for every two analysts that were positive about the future markets, there was probably 10 that were not positive. So there was still a lot of anti-sentiment, stock market going on.
I was going to say anti-Semitism. No,
not that. But anyways, they were right on the markets coming back. And I still think, go ahead and you can talk a little bit about what they feel. I mean, no one has a crystal ball.
No one has a crystal ball. This is the mid-year outlook, so they're doing a real short-term last 6 months of this year. This came out in July before, a lot of things have happened recently. But they're still bullish,
They're
optimistic on the economy.
Yeah.
So, but the last 7 years, I thought it was pretty interesting. This is how we opened up the article. So in the last 7 years, we've had a near bear market in 2018. The first Fed hiking resume over a whole decade. In 2020, another bear market. Once in a century pandemic, one of the most contentious elections in history, high inflation, most aggressive Fed hiking in 40 years, another bear market in 2022, along with the bonds like you were talking about, a war in Ukraine, and then another conflict in the Middle East. But 7 years ago, the Dow was 20,000, and now it's 40. So it doubled in that 7 years, over 100%.
And by stating all those events that
all the events, everything negative. That happened, two bear markets, the hiking of the rates, the wars. The S&P was up 163% over the last 7 years. So
he's saying, you know, bad things happen, but if you stay the course.
Yeah, it says, yeah, exactly what we're talking about, you know, so the way bad things happen and away we go. So they think the economy is likely to stay the way, you know, stay strong, and there's three reasons they do. They say that incomes are growing faster than inflation. That's their first argument.
So okay.
They think people are still making, you know, pretty good money.
I need a raise.
Well, raises, yeah. You do need a raise, Russ.
I need to get up with inflation.
The second one is household balance sheets. I thought this was kind of interesting. Household balance sheets are strong. So they're saying that.
But is that true? Because, I mean, I think it could be strong for some of them, but not everybody.
For homeowners, it's strong.
For homeowners, yeah. The value of your house is
if you're a renter, it's not strong.
No. Yeah. So
it went down.
Right. Yeah. So they're talking about homeowners being.
Yeah. But that's asset rich and nothing.
And your 401k.
No liquidity.
401k. Yeah. Yeah. I got nothing in the checking account.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what they're saying is liabilities, which is debt, as a percentage of disposable income is almost exactly the same as it was in 1999.
Yeah, well, I just talked to a girl yesterday when I was in Phoenix, and she said her house now is worth $1.8 million up in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
There, she lives in a nice area in Phoenix, but they're struggling to make ends. you know, they're
cost of living and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Paycheck to paycheck,
everything up.
Right. Well, that's not a liquid asset.
They said the bad thing is that the kids can never afford a house when they look at all that. They know the kids. What are they going to do? Because getting in, I mean, if you're in and your assets are climbing, wonderful. But the next generation, it was like that in the 70s, too. And I remember growing up that the house my parents lived in was $19,900. And by the time I graduated high school, it was $75,000.
Yeah.
Means that you can have single people or family members maybe living together, right?
Yeah.
Or you're gonna have...
Living in the basement.
Yeah, you're going to have kids stay with parents.
Stay with parents
until
longer.
But it can recover like it did from the 70s, obviously.
Yeah.
It can flip around, but that was Jimmy Carter.
Well, rates coming down are going to make a big deal, too. Yeah. You're getting a loan at 7%
It's going to be like they think 0.25%. It's a show thing.
Yeah.
But
to go against that a little bit, George, credit card balances are increasing.
1.1, 1.2 trillion.
Yeah, I mean, so
disposable
income.
Interest rates on the credit cards
is pretty good. Then that's, you know, disposable or credit cards is... negative. I also talked to a car guy like a week, 4 or 5 days ago. He was saying that there's more repos going up on the car business.
Yeah.
Used cars are
business getting... closures are high, too.
Yeah.
Bankruptcies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, so, it's harder to borrow money if they...
So it depends on how you look at all the system. I mean, you look at all the stuff.
Yeah. And I think there's waves of people that are better off, but I think there's waves of people that are worse off.
Yeah.
Probably some in the middle, but
yeah.
So, but keep going.
The savings
we're going to blow your.
But here's the thing. Yeah, I know. I figured you would. That's what I was hoping for. But you're right, though. The savings rate averaged 7% in 2019, and now it's just over 3%.
That's a big difference.
I think during COVID, it was up to like 18% or something.
Yeah, well, you couldn't go out.
Because people, couldn't, you know, so.
So the savings rate.
Okay. So these guys are optimistic then for the next 6 months?
Yeah, they are. So the third one is the labor market is strong.
Until this morning.
Yeah. Of course, they came out with this at the end of June, but they'll change their tune a little bit.
Yeah, unemployment went up, and the new jobs were 114,000 or something. So it was well low. Yeah.
But I hear a lot of business owners are like, you know, they're trying to hire people and can't get the right fit. You know.
You mean somebody that wants to actually go to work?
Yeah, and someone who can fit the, you know, work ethic. So those jobs out there, but I guess they're becoming less since rates are down.
Yeah.
What was the other thing they said?
Labor market. So.
Okay, strong labor market.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of interesting, Tom. You gave kudos to Carson Group. So on the leading economic indicators, they still think it's pointing to a strong economy. They use like 20 different components. They use their own component to measure the U.S. economy.
Not the government that changes the formula every 3 months?
They've got their own formulas, consumer-related indicators, housing indicators, business and manufacturing, sentiment, and financial markets. That's only five of them, but they have they call it an LEI that Carson uses. But that's pretty neat. I think it's neat they have their own indicator instead of using, like you said, what the government's using.
Yeah.
But as far as the, you talked a little bit about the buckets and reallocation, some of the asset classes they do like, because growth has had that big run up, is small caps and value.
Yeah. And international, is that on there?
International, they're lukewarm on. They have a, like a hold on. Yeah. But the other ones, financials that I found interesting, and industrials.
Yeah. So if you look at, you know, the last 5-7 years, the growth stocks have really done a lot better than value. And that's starting to change a little bit. If you start looking at what stocks is trying to go back the other way, the value companies are coming back into play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very common, because they usually rotate back and forth. But at five years of growth is not as common, because usually value would sneak in there and be a good sector to be in. But, you know, I know about like last month, I think small cap values were up like 10% in 1 month, which was a pretty good move. So I guess what I'm coming at is there seems to be a rotation back from the growth stocks more to value. And if you have too much in growth and you don't have too much in value, it might behoove you to look at that and maybe make some rotation into value. You know, the international market has been, our U.S. markets have beat it for the last, you know, 10 years. It's been,
yeah.
But I hear a lot of stuff and I read stuff that they think internationals, you know, is almost a value play. It hasn't really done much the last 10 years. And then year to date, a lot of the international stuff's up like 7%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not doing terrible.
No.
So I was just curious.
Are you talking about developed international compared to emerging?
I'm just lumping it all together. But,
okay.
You know, but since they haven't moved up that good in the last 10 years, there's kind of a value play in the international that I think people forgot about, because after 10 years, you forget, right?
Yeah.
So what other sector? They like any other sector?
So they've got,
let's talk about the banks.
Underweight,
they like the
overweight
banks.
Overweight and neutral, and they've got the neutral on the international and the emerging markets.
Okay. Yeah. So you're talking about they like financials. Well, the financials.
Yeah, they do like financials.
Well, you know, a year and a half ago with the financial crunch, a lot of these bank stocks, especially the mid-size, small-size bank stocks, really took a hit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, value there too.
Value play. But, so at the beginning of the year, they come out with their expectations on the S&P 500.
Yeah.
Finish up with this real quick. They had between 11 and 13%. That was their estimate that the S&P would be up.
Yeah.
And then at mid-year, with the way it's been doing so well this year, they actually changed their target to 17 to 20%. So their target
at the
now,
end of the year?
Yeah. For the whole year, that's what their that's their target now.
Is that a bet? I'm hearing, George, you want to be on their side? I'll bet against
a little lunch bet.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, hey, we'll take another break here. This is here. Money Talk, 5-6 a.m.
This is Derek Hegerberg, branch manager with Guild Mortgage, NMLS number 180899. Thank you for making us Yuma's best mortgage lender 7 years in a row. At Guild Mortgage, we're more than just a lender. We're your trusted guide through the home buying journey. We do offer educational workshops for first-time home buyers, credit and budgeting, and also real estate investing. We proudly serve your friends, family, and neighbors, answering questions and finding lending solutions. How may we serve you today? Give us a call at 928-247-9089 or visit guildyuma.com.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
About a shot that's made.
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk here. Tom Maresch, myself, George Davis, in here on another Friday morning, talking about a little bit about the economy and the projection of what Carson thinks can happen. That's our advisory firm we work with on the next 6 months. Any other points there, George, that you want to bring up?
Yeah, we talk a lot about equities, Tom, but we should talk a little bit about bonds. People still, I think they get confused on why bonds act that way historically. You know, when rates are up, or when rates come down, which they think they're going to be cutting, then bonds should appreciate, especially if they're on the longer term. So Carson's thought process is the second half of this year that the Barclays Ag, because you have an extended duration on those bonds, mm-hmm. will outperform the shorter 2-year treasuries, for example.
So extend,
that's what did well at the beginning of the
year. So extend the maturity date a little bit.
Extend the duration, yeah.
Yeah. So, if you think about bonds, the Barclays Bond Index was down 13% in 22, up 5% in 23, and it was flat up to about a month ago, but mm-hmm. now I think it's up like 1.5%.
Mm-hmm.
So really bonds overall are still in the hole from 3 months ago.
Yeah.
Or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that really baffles people because bonds are the safe haven that a lot of people go to, especially retirees, mm-hmm. and they shouldn't be as volatile as what it's done the last few years.
But it's not as volatile, is it?
Well, I mean, recently, no. But if you look at, like, if you're in bonds for 2.5 years and you're still down 6%, like, you'd be pretty mad, right?
Or, that's not good.
Yeah, so, but I think what he's saying, though, is if rates drop, and they're talking about a rate cut maybe this year and then one next year. I've heard one, mm-hmm. two maybe, but so rates will come down, which means bonds should do better.
So let me give you a real life scenario. So let's say a year ago, Tom, you bought a 10-year treasury paying 5%. Make it easy.
Okay.
And I saying to myself, wait a minute, I like that. I want a 5% treasury. And I look today and it's 3.8% for my 10-year treasury, but I want your 10-year treasury that you bought a year ago. So can I buy it from you for the exact same price you bought it a year ago? The 5%?
Only if I'm dumb.
Yeah.
So the market would trade it, so the premium would go up.
Yeah, you're going to say, hey, you can have my 5%er because I know you're only getting a 3.8, but you're going to pay a premium for it.
Yeah. So. And that's what the market does. Like if you're going to buy a 5% treasury that was yielding that, they would make the premium high enough so that it averages about 3.5.
Yeah, okay.
So it balances out with what can be bought today.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people don't understand the bond markets, but they trade daily. And I think compared to where the equity market is, like 2/3 of the money is in bonds. Like, you know, you always hear about the stock market.
Makes sense.
But there's a big chunk in the bond market. And really what the bond market does is finances projects for corporations. So if I was a Walmart and I want to build, you know, 10 more Walmarts and I don't have the money, you know, I would put some bonds out there that and pay them back interest for X amount of years. So it's a ways to raise capital for corporations.
So I bring that up because in this article, Carson thought that rates would be higher for longer because they're pretty optimistic in the economy. But if rates do start to come down, you know, there's money market funds out there and CDs paying 5%. There was. Now, when rates start to drop, those fixed incomes are going to be coming down. So, you know, you're not going to get any appreciation when it comes to just that fixed income. But the bond market, allocating more into the bond market could help with that. You know, rates come down and bonds go up, then your appreciation on top of your interest.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and that's why I think it's important to have, especially as you get close to retirement and during retirement, to have money going at four different levels or different speeds, your portfolio, because it's like a chess game. The more pieces you have on the board, the more moves you can make. So in an up market, if the market goes up 25%, that means bucket four is up 25%. Bucket three might be up, you know, 16%.
Mm.
But then you could then take some of those profits and move them back up to bucket one or two, or if bucket four goes down 25%, which will happen someday, you can take some of the profits from bucket one, two, and three and move it towards bucket four. So it just gives you a way to play the market, whether it's a good market or a bad market, you're able to take advantage of it.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because people don't think about that. They get emotional, like you said. So the market's down 20-25%. You allocate from the more conservative, which isn't the easiest thing to do when the market's out, down, and the economy's bad.
Sure.
But you put it into that more aggressive and take advantage of value there. So just to summarize, Tom, the last for this Carson mid-year outlook, they're overweight equities because they're optimistic on the equities, and they're underweight bonds mainly because they think that rates are going to be higher for longer as opposed to come down quickly. But they're also overweight, meaning that they like. If overweight means they like it, they like alternatives. So as a diversifier to bonds. So that includes some of the strategies mentioned before, commodities, but they also had gold in here, and they said they've held that in their tactical portfolio since March of 2023. So I'll give them some kudos there. And their tactical portfolios means that they can move, they have discretion. So if they want to move into gold or some alternatives, they can do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think gold the last 24 months is up like close to 20%, maybe.
It's at 2,500, I think.
An 18, ounce. Yeah. So it was like 1,800. So that's more than that. So maybe it's up 25% or so.
It's up to 2,500.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other moral of the story is the more money you have, the more you want to spread around because you don't know what sectors are going to fall out of bed and which ones are going to hold value better. And then when you start rearranging the buckets, and if you want to, you know, technically over time, you should buy in buckets that are really, you know, buy low, sell high. So buy sectors that are really beat up because they will come back. You can use some of these other sectors that have either held their value or have gone up as the buying power. Mm-hmm. You always want to have bullets in the gun because bullets in the gun, I give the analogy, lets you shoot. And if you have no bullets and the market drops 50%, well, what are you going to do? Nothing.
Yeah.
So you want to have, buying power. So you got to kind of position yourself to have that. And then the other thing, not knowing, you know, where the bottom's at, and no one does, is just dollar cost average. That's your best friend, you know, buy a little bit here, buy a little bit there, do it over, you know, the next 3 to 6 months. And try to find that bottom.
Yeah. I like the conclusion they had on this article. Kind of just hits home with what you were saying earlier, Tom. So the costliest investing mistakes are not missed opportunities, but straying from the long-term plan, like you were talking about. Those come in three basic flavors. Being too aggressive when the markets are overheated. It's one of the mistakes. Just as dangerous, being too conservative when the market's beaten up. And then overconfident in the ability to jump in and out of different investments without paying attention to basic investing principles. So give a shout out for Yuma Investment Group and Carson. I say we're the non-emotional coach. So when times do, because we think there's going to be some volatility here, with an election and everything going on when the Feds are going to be raising rates. So, there's a lot going on out there and, it behooves you to at least have some advice from a professional and, from one of our advisors at Yuma Investment Group. We have, what, 7 in the office now? Seven advisors. So,
yeah. Another good thing about taking risk is advisor and a client can sit there and talk for hours about, what kind of risk you're willing to take and all this. And it's really hard to, figure that out. So, we've latched on to a program through Carson called Riskalyze, and basically it lets you plug in numerical numbers and you take a little risk assessment test, not based on words or based on questions. It's more based on numbers, and that everyone has some numbers in their head as far as where the pain point is. For example, if you give me $250,000 and I said, look, if they had a very poor 6 months, like, what's your threshold you can lose in that money? Is it 10,000? Is it 15? Is it 20? And everyone has a different threshold, so it's never the same for everybody. But then you can use that number and make sure that the risk category is fine. Because if someone's not in the right risk category, they're more aggressive than they should be, or the second the market takes a big hit, phone call is going to ring, and they're going to, I can't sleep at night, get me out. And that's the last place you want to be getting out at.
Mm-hmm.
So very important to have a good risk assessment done and to do it as you go because things change in your life. Let's just say, for example, if you got a divorce and half the assets went to the spouse, well, you're going to have a different risk assessment than you did before that happened. So with the changes in life, you want to keep that updated.
Mm-hmm. And it's also kind of interesting, depending on what's going on with the, you know, in the world and the economy, Tom, people take, you know, our clients will take those risk assessments. And if the, you know, market's doing good and the economy's good, usually they'll score a little bit higher. And the economy's down, they'll score a little bit lower. So it just looks at the behavioral economics of it, and you know, kind of shows what's going on with the economy along with that risk score. So we're going to take our last break here. One more to go, Russ, and Money Talk, AM 560.
This is Derek Hegeberg, branch manager with Guild Mortgage, NMLS number 180899. Thank you for making us Yuma's best mortgage lender 7 years in a row. At Guild Mortgage, we're more than just a lender. We're your trusted guide through the home buying journey. We do offer educational workshops for first-time home buyers, credit and budgeting, and also real estate investing. We proudly serve your friends, family, and neighbors, answering questions and finding lending solutions. How may we serve you today? Give us a call at 928-247-9089 or visit guildyuma.com.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk, Yuma Investment Group, Tom Rush, George Davis, here talking about things. One of the things I want to bring up today is the a lot of our business is dependent on the tax code. So there's always things changing with rules and that, and it's important to know what's going on. But one of the most recent changes that came out on July 18th was how RMDs, which are required minimum distributions, are handled if you're a beneficiary, not for the spouse, but for anybody else. So they just changed the rules, I don't know, about a year and a half ago, where if you inherit an IRA from anybody except your spouse, that you have 10 years and the funds have to be pulled out of the account. And there was where you can wait 10 years and do it at the very end, or you can pull a little bit out along the way, skip a couple years, they didn't care, just get it out within 10 years. But there was some confusion off that, and they came back and ruled that there is still the 10-year rule, but now they want it pulled out a little bit every year for that 10-year period. So you can't just sit on it for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what they probably realize is a lot of people will forget, you know, was that the 8th year, the 11th year, and they won't know the 10th year. So that's a change that that's going to go into effect in 2025. So they basically came out and said, if you inherited a beneficiary IRA in 21, 22, 23, 24, that you're not required to take the RMD, but starting in 25, you will.
You will have to take it.
So if you own a beneficiary IRA from somebody you inherited from, make sure you understand that rule in 25 because it has changed.
But in 25 is when they're going to require you to do that required minimum distribution where they waived it before. But let's say this happened in 22. You still have the 10-year rule from 22, not from 25.
Yeah.
So, and you're talking about that least. It's called the least as rapidly rule, Tom. So if someone's already been taking their RMD, you're supposed to continue it. So that's what you're talking about with that, you know, taking it each year over that 10-year span. So if my dad passed away and he's already over the age for the RMD. Mm-hmm. He's already been taking the RMD when I inherited the IRA. I have to continue those RMDs.
Correct.
So that's an easy way to remember it. But if he hadn't taken, he wasn't of RMD required minimum distribution age, then I would have that choice like you're talking about on the 10 years. I still have to do it in 10 years, but I don't have to take it every year.
Yeah. So very, you know, the rules get complicated. So it's important to know how to prevent that. Because if you don't do it, it's what, a 25% penalty, right?
Mm-hmm.
From the IRS. Yeah. So. Now, another interesting thing I found out is if someone goes into a nursing home or a care facility, it's not so much in Arizona or in Yuma, but I think in other places, sometimes they make you put down a lump sum of money. Like it might cost you $25,000 lump sum to get in, and that gets applied towards your bit. Some of they keep, some of it they apply it, but that's almost like a country club membership where they make you pay.
There's some more prestigious ones.
A lump sum down.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, that's considered a medical cost. So you can deduct that off your taxes. But if you don't make enough money, you might not get the full deduction. So one of the ideas out there is if you have medical expenses compared to your, you get to deduct if it's up to 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. If you have medical expenses that are beyond that, you lose that tax. I mean, you get to write off what you can, but you can't write off more. But what they're telling to do, the strategy would be to do a convert your IRA to the Roth IRA. Because when you convert IRA to Roth IRA, it gives you more income. That's a taxable event. So then you get to use that tax loss to offset that taxable event. So it's a zero-sum game.
Okay.
So
so you're basically taking advantage by converting that to a Roth, which means more income. But then that's going to put you up into that bracket where you can deduct that, like long-term care facility or other medical costs.
Yeah, because if you have too much long-term care or even medical, say you're in a big accident and you had $200,000 bill and you got to come up with $30,000, well, that might put you also over if you only make $60,000 a year. But you can you use a conversion of the IRA to the Roth to use that tax loss that you can't use because you don't make enough basically. Mm-hmm. So get your income high enough so there would be, zero sum game. So I read that and that you don't think about those things, but it makes a lot of sense.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah. No. So that's one of them.
The other one, Tom, I wanted to touch on real quick about to help out the listeners is they have now with the 401ks getting a little more with the times and having Roth contributions, and there's a Roth component to a traditional 401k, they have what's called in-plan conversions. You have to check with your plan administrator and see if they allow it. But if your traditional 401k, which is pre-tax money that you've been putting in, and you want to convert that to in the plan itself and convert it to the Roth component, then that's available now. Now, that is going to be taxable. You're going to have to come up with the tax money outside of the 401k, but it is an opportunity, especially because what would happen before is when you would convert, if you were under 59.5, you would risk, the rollover and risk that penalty also. But if you do it in plan and you're younger than 59.5, there's no penalty. So that is something kind of new out there that they just started doing about a year ago. So check into that Roth conversion for in plan with your 401k.
And then the other thing that came out is the courts said again that beneficiary forms on retirement accounts are going to hold water, meaning the person that took it up to the case filed this had 28 years ago he had a girlfriend. She was a beneficiary on his retirement plan, never changed it, and then married someone, got a divorce, and now he has a new girlfriend. But basically, when he died, it went all the way back to the girlfriend who 28 years ago.
That he left,
and he challenged it in the court and said, I don't even know this person. But the court said, nope. If someone's down as a beneficiary in an ERISA plan, that's who's getting the money.
Oh wow!
Which reinforces that you better make sure you update your beneficiary forms.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that. You've seen that.
Yeah.
In that business where people don't think about it, and then they realize that the beneficiary either passed away or they not at the person they want to have it anymore.
Also, when you go to the bank and your savings account, a lot of times they don't ask me for a beneficiary form. You know, they don't just offer, hey, you better have a beneficiary form. So you see people with, you know, money in the bank, and I ask them, do you have a beneficiary attached? And they're not sure, or they haven't updated it there. Because we always update them in the reviews. Yeah, with our clients, but not your savings or bank account.
Yeah, and you can title the bank accounts, like you can have a single name account with a transfer on death, TOD, but people don't think about that. They just go and say, I'm going to open up a single name account, but if you don't ask for the TOD, then sometimes they don't even offer it to you.
Right.
So you got to make sure. That's a big thing about estate planning, is you should be able to go through and look at how everything's titled on the asset and the beneficiary. And make sure that's up to par because, again, more times than not, even for people that are very organized, you find out that something's not titled right. Another interesting thing that I read, I get these tax newsletters I subscribe to, and I try to keep up on things because there's ideas that I can share with the client, basically. You're taxed for Social Security, as you probably know, right? And that number is going up quite a bit every year.
6.2%?
And an employer has to put in 6.2%.
Yeah, and the employee matches.
Yeah, so as of right now, for this year, it's 168,600 is what's going to be taxed at 6.2%. By the employee and 6.2 by the employer.
Okay.
And when I started the business, I think that number was like 68,000. I mean, this was 30 years ago, but it was so every year they have it go up. So next year it's going to be 174,900. That's almost a $5,000 increase. And I have it going all the way to 2033. So by 2033, well, I'll give you 2025, 174,900 of your income will be taxed. 2033, it's going to be $242,000.
Oh, okay.
So it's going up another $60,000-some. So that's a direct, you know, tax for the employee, a direct tax for the employer, right? Mm-hmm. So everyone pays more tax. So one of the ideas, and if you're have an LLC and you have your own business, you got to pay both of them. You got to pay as an employee and the employer.
Oh.
So it gets more expensive.
Yeah.
So a lot of times, what you could do is change your LLC partnership to a S corp, which is a different titling, and an S corp will let you make it where you can say you can give yourself an income. Let's just say I'm going to pay myself $80,000 a year, and I'm going to pay Social Security and $80,000, and then the rest is passed through. So it lets you control by having an S corp. You get to control what you make for Social Security.
Okay.
So I know we're
that's interesting.
Yeah, you know, good idea to talk to, you know, if you have a CPA or somebody, but it really makes a difference in how you label your business: sole proprietor, LLC, S corp, C corp, and there's different advantages from that.
Yeah, but people don't realize that's something they should be asking, and probably aren't getting, you know, hey, this is an option. But I don't think that's a horrible thing because, you know, the Social Security, that's one of the ways that they can help that Social Security fund is by having, you know, higher incomes be putting money in.
Because but you're better off putting money in a 401k or retirement plan because that's 100% your money.
Oh, yeah.
Social Security, you're spreading it out among other people, right?
I mean, you're not getting you are.
The full benefit.
Yeah.
Hey, we'll finish up on the hour here. This is Money Talk. Everyone have a great weekend. See you next time.
The opinions voiced in Money Talk with Tom Rush and George Davis Wealth are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial or tax advisor prior to investing. Guests on Money Talk are not affiliated with CWM LLC. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC and SEC Registered Investment Advisor.
We'll be right back.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.